Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you came by tonight. I am by myself tonight here, and I have some really important things to talk to you all about. I was in the doctor's office today. Most of you know my husband is going through some stuff, and I picked up a Time magazine. It is, I think it's the July issue, and on the front page is kind of a ghostly picture of the ever-famous hoodie. And the title in the front page is After Trayvon. So I picked it up and I thought, oh boy, this is probably going to put me in one of those places where I just want to, you know, shake everybody until they try to figure out where to go instead of where everybody's going. Everybody's going for revenge, more hatred, more problems, more drama. I can't wrap my brain around why that's where everybody thinks we need to go. I understand the anger. I understand the hurt. I understand all of the above. What I don't understand is why they think they will beget anything but more of the same if that's the way they try to fix this. So when I picked up this magazine, I perused through it and I came to a commentary by Michael Nutter. Michael Nutter is a lifelong resident of Philadelphia, and he's been the mayor since 2008. Now, that's a pretty long time. Homicides in the city are down 39% so far this year, the lowest year-to-date murder rate of his tenure. Now, if you don't know, and you may, Robert Nutter is a black man. So I thought, well, I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Now, there is a side script of this story. It says race and homicide in America. 47% of homicide victims from 1980 to 2008 were black. 12% African American share of the population during that time. Those are not very good figures. Now, this man is upset for many reasons, one of which is that he mourns the loss of young people, as do I. But I want to read this to you, and forgive me if I fumble. I have pretty good print on this magazine, but my seeing is getting so it's worse and worse. Anyway, every death is a tragedy in this nation, whether in Pennsylvania, Connecticut, or Florida. We all have suffered a great tragedy with the death of Trayvon Martin. Amen. But Trayvon's story is only the latest in our epidemic of violence compounded by race that must be addressed in America. Why is it that African American males are so disproportionately both the victims and the perpetrators of violence, more often than not against one another? In Philadelphia, where I am the mayor, not me, you get that right, everybody, 75% of our homicide victims are black men. Gosh. About 80% of the people we arrest for homicide are black men. Black men across the country are killing one another. Yet that epidemic is rarely part of any national conversation. When Aurora happened, when Tucson happened, and certainly when Newtown happened, we as a country launched a heartfelt conversation about gun violence, gun safety, and the use of weapons. We lurch from tragedy to tragedy to tragedy, trying to figure out what to do along the way. In the meantime, 32 Americans are killed by gun violence every day, on average, a disproportionate number of whom are black men. That's apparently not breaking news. With each death, the networks aren't interrupting game shows or soap operas to give you that information. We get lulled back into complacency and somehow live with the fact that we have a new town every day in America. And a disproportionate number of those dying are black men. That cannot be acceptable in the United States of America. Our priorities are askew, I would say so. Our leaders talk a lot about international terrorism. I often talk about domestic terrorist, by which I mean not foreign nationals plotting violence on these shores, but the day-to-day crime that is even more devastating to our cities than the episodic threats from overseas. My focus comes from my experiences and the buildup of living all my life in West Philadelphia and Winfield. And as a city council member and then later as mayor, attending numerous funerals and talking to moms and dads who have lost their children and other loved ones to senseless acts of violence. What's missing are the fundamentals. It's about jobs. Amen. It's about education. Amen. It's about economic investment and job retraining. It's about getting benefits to people who need them. We know that in Philadelphia, thousands of people are not even signing up for the available benefits to take care of themselves and their families. We know clearly that there are few things that work. Investing more in Head Start programs, summer jobs and programs for teens, and community development block grants for cities to put people to work. Those three areas have been cut significantly over the past few years. The U.S. seems to be more invested in nation building in other countries around the world, Iraq and Afghanistan in particular, than in nation building or rebuilding here at home. Oh, God, how sad is that, everybody? How sad is that? That's like taking care of somebody else's baby while yours is all alone. I don't get it. New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu and I co-lead an effort called Cities United. We now have close to 50 mayors signed up. It's specifically focused on reducing the violence affecting African-American men and boys across the country. What does it propose? The first step is getting municipal leaders to acknowledge these challenges and then deciding on the best practices for addressing them. What are some programs and services we can provide? And what can we as mayors, in a more unified effort, do to change things? More and more mayors are getting involved in trying to address the cycle of violence in cities across the country. If we get this right, everyone would be involved. We need a partnership among cities, states, and federal agencies. The corporate community, the philanthropic community, the religious community, the social advocacy community, all working towards helping African American men and boys. We can no longer operate in silos. We have to work in a concerted, holistic, and comprehensive effort to deal with these issues. We are way past the time of just talking. What we really need is action. I know that President Obama cares about these issues, but as powerful as the President of the United States is, he will need a lot of folks to rally with him to work towards solutions. It will require folks to have open minds and open hearts and, more than anything, to be dedicated to the change. We can change things, that I know. The question is, are we ready to do it? Are we willing to set ego aside, be vulnerable and hear things that none of us necessarily want to hear? We have to try right now, because our children are dying in the streets every day. Now, for those of you who don't know about this, I'm going to bring it up again. I have talked about it on the show. A couple years ago, I was doing a lot of lecturing around Florida. I was invited to different schools and to different communities, and I talked a lot about the fact that we've got to get past this, and we've got to understand that we're all here together. I don't get it. I don't get why you'd rather fight than love. I don't get it. But one of the organizations I went to was a place in very South Miami. And I met a lot of really, really good people. And it was a mock funeral. And at the front of the, it was in a park, and at the front of the large canopy was a casket. And there was a reverend there, and he talked about the fact that this casket was in remembrance of the three boys that had fallen to street crime, and their moms were there in mourning. Incredibly sad, incredibly moving. I must tell you, for what it's worth, myself and my grandchildren were the only white people there. And when I got up to speak, I said, there are some circles that would think this was very strange. A big white woman like me coming here with all of her grandchildren, but I feel very welcome. And they all applauded that. And I said, and I think that I've never met any of you. So I would have to say that until we do something to each other personally, we all care about each other and we're friends. And they all applauded that. It was wonderful. And it was warm and sad and all of those emotions at the same time. I met teachers who actually keep clothing and open up a shower in the gym for some of the kids to come in and use the shower and recycle their clothes. It was amazing what was going on there. But this is one man. This is one man. He's talked on my show before. I'll have him on again. I love him. I've done a Christmas drive with him. He spent a long time in jail from doing all the wrong things and selling drugs and trafficking and all of the above and stealing. He told me he started stealing when he was like 7 years old. And while he was away in prison, a good majority of his family was killed. And if they weren't killed, by the time he got out, they were in. So he decided that he had to make some changes, and indeed he has, but he's one man. And he also has a very special handful of other people that are helping him, but it's not enough. It has to come from every nook and cranny. It has to come from all of us. We all have to care. Now, in this Time magazine, there's also a story about what happened the Sunday morning that all of this came to light with Trayvon. And I'm going to read bits and pieces of this because this will show you how easy it is to get everybody, I don't know, on this roll of anger and frustration and hatred. And what can we do about that? Shortly after dawn, most Sundays, a dozen or so black pastors gathered by conference call to pray and compare notes for their sermons later that morning. But on July 14th, when Howard John Wesley called in at 6 a.m., there were already more than 100 pastors on the line, and his computer showed 57 tweets from members of his congregation in Alexandria, Virginia, all with the same questions. What would he say to help heal the hurt and anger after the verdict the night before? How would he deal with the fact that a neighborhood watchman, George Zimmerman, had been found not guilty after shooting dead an unarmed black 17-year-old boy named Trayvon Martin? All the preachers had families of their own, and immediately when you know something like this has occurred, the first person or persons that you think of is your own kids, your own family. And one of the ministers said that his son asked him, "Daddy, is George Zimmerman going to heaven?" And the pastor didn't know what to say. And then the boy asked, "Daddy, am I next?" This is awful. This is sad. And you can understand why so many people are angry. I get it. I totally, totally get it. But again, that's not all that it's about. It's a sad case that it's turned to this, and it's a sad case that all these facts and figures are in front of us to look at. But that's not where it starts, and that certainly won't be where it's remedied or finished. It starts with all of us. Maya Angelou, beautiful, beautiful woman, author, poet. She reflected on the talk about Trayvon and I guess Martin Luther King's son and Martin Luther King Jr.'s "I Have a Dream" speech. And a number of people think only blacks were hurt, that African Americans were hurt by this decision. But that's not true. All you have to do is look at the protesters. They are white and black, Spanish-speaking and Asian. What is really injured, bruised, if you will, is the psyche of our national population. We are all harmed. We are all belittled. And we give to the rest of the world more ammunition to sneer at us. It really makes me see how far we have to go, that one man armed with a gun can actually profile a young man because he is black and end up shooting him dead is so painful. And I don't think you can get any truer than that. You cannot get any truer than that. And there's a lot of talk in this issue about how to keep our children safe and what to do in regard to to how you talk to your kids and what you say to your kids about what is going on in the world and why there is this kind of unfortunate hatred and judgmentality. Now, you know, we've talked about this so many times on my show, so many times about the fact that we have a tendency to judge and to pass judgment by looking at somebody, by the clothes they wear, the way they talk, the color of their skin, whatever helps us make a decision on somebody at face value is seldom a very good thing to do. You really can't judge a book by its cover. You really cannot. Every time I hear that saying, I think of all the times in funny comedy shows and stuff where they show the young man sitting there reading Of Mice and Men or For Whom the Bell Tolls, and you look on the other side and he's got a Playboy book inside the cover of this famous American novel. And can it be any more in your face true than you can't judge a book by its cover? How simple some things get and how simple some things can be. Now, there are some more stories in this. If you folks want to get this Time magazine, I would suggest it. I don't even remember how much it costs, but it's certainly interesting to hear some of the input from these people who are in the trenches. Now, I'd like to read something that I wrote that kind of sums up what I think should be happening today, for what it's worth. But the way that goes is this is my show, and I get to read anything to you that I want to. You don't have to listen to it. But the reason I do this show is so that I get an opportunity to share some of the things that I feel, and you need to know that everything I take into consideration, I try to always take in the big picture and think of what's good for everybody, not just for Rainey. After reading these articles today in the Time magazine, I realized that there are several of us who get it. We get that we must be better leaders with solutions that serve all mankind, everybody, starting with education. I'm not talking about the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. That is always at the forefront, and it gets quite a bit of consideration, as well as many organizations that supervise its operation. I'm talking about playground education, how we teach the very young about sharing and caring. They actually begin better than they end. If you know what I mean, when they start out in their innocence, they're in a better place than after we start so-called teaching them. In the beginning, they're colorblind. Second, they don't judge. Third, they want your attention and your friendship, no matter who you are. What happens is us, the very color-conscious, the judgmental, and the jealous adults. This, by the way, includes all of us, whether we're white, black, yellow, brown, or striped. We plant these seeds every day. Every day. Our leaders, the ones large and in charge, need to create a world that does not have so many levels of lifestyle. Jobs that, when done well and with talent, get paid enough to live on. Utilities that do not wipe out the monthly income of senior citizens. The opportunity to live comfortably, legally. Stop spending enormous amounts of money on the campaign trail. We have all kinds of media and technology today. Don't fly all over the world for nothing. You can talk from the comfort of your office to us in the comfort of our homes. It's safer for one thing and nicer for everyone. Fix the vast differential of income between CEOs and the reason they are so successful. Ideas are expensive. The execution of the ideas should be as well. If we could make some of these changes, there would be less anger and jealousy, hence less violence. Opportunities that are made available to earn a livable living will curb the theft and the illegal activities. We will never stop everything that's bad. I know that. But we can make things much better than the way they are right now. When controversy is the blue plate special every day, it's what we all consume. And it fills us with more hatred and less humanity. Let us mourn those lost without reason and celebrate the opportunity to not let it happen again. Now, those are my words. And having said that, after doing what I've done for the last several years and talking to the people that I've talked to and learning what I know about the human race, we have it in us to be what we set out to be. But it means letting go of so much hatred and so much anger and showing more forgiveness, showing more love, showing more compassion for people that may be in a different struggle than you're in, or people who are struggling because of mental illness, like we talked about before, or people who are struggling because they've lived a life that's been horrific for them and abusive, and they are afraid to trust people. They are afraid to open up and bring themselves to a higher level. All of these people need our help. But in the meantime, we need the help, a lot of the help, from the people who sit over us, the people who are keeping things in line for us, running our world as we know it. And until we get that kind of help, nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to be any better, and it most definitely will get worse. I feel as though the way we're headed right now, with just this upheaval of, I mean, the statistics I've been reading the last few days about all the young men that have been killed in the last 3 to 4 years, and I didn't know anything about any of them. They were somebody's child, too. And in some of the cases, it was unwarranted, totally unwarranted. And somebody sent me one the other day of a black neighborhood watchman who killed a 17-year-old white boy. And he wasn't doing anything wrong either. You know, it can't be about black and white. That's the very first thing we have to get past. Yes, I'm white. I don't have anything against anybody who is kind to me and who treats me with some respect. Nobody. And again, it doesn't matter to me whether you're polka-dotted or striped. But what I do find fault in is when there's no effort to see beyond what you see with your eyes. You know, I told you all the story one night of the couple that the man was, his eyes were damaged in an incubator. So for all intents and purposes, he's been sightless his whole life. And his wife lost her sight gradually from an eye disorder. And they're both completely blind. And they are a married couple. And let me tell you, they taught me so much about how inaccurate and how unnecessary it is to be able to please people by what you look like. These two people were so in love with each other, and they have never, I repeat, never seen what each other looks like. Never. They fell in love with their touch, their voice, their kindness, and their love that they got back. And neither one of them are beautiful people. But it doesn't matter, because to each other, they're just everything that ever was. So it should show you how little that really means at the end of the day. Nothing. It means nothing. And it wouldn't have mattered if one was black and one was white, because that didn't even enter into it. It wouldn't have mattered if one was 6'4" and the other one was 4'11". It wouldn't have mattered. They fell in love with each other, with who they are inside, not who they are on the outside. So it means nothing at the end of the day what you look like, but your actions mean a lot. And that's what we have to work on. But I also believe that in order to get all of us to a better place, the United States of America has to be in better shape. There can't be all this grief, all the money worries, I know so many young people who work every day, 40, 50 hours a week, and they cannot rent an apartment, pay the utilities, have a car, pay the insurance, and hit McDonald's once a week. They can't. Minimum wage. If you make minimum wage, that's, let's see, 7 times 40, that's $280. If you bring home $220, you're lucky. $220 a week. Now, by the standards I was taught in high school, that's what your monthly rent should be, what you bring home in a week. So say you're making $10. Woohoo! Then you're making $400, and you might bring home $320. But if you're lucky enough to work in a place where your employer pays half and you pay half of your insurance coverage, and there's you and your wife or you and your husband and a child, then you're not bringing home close to that on your $10 an hour. So again, how are you supposed to make ends meet? Yes, They make food stamps readily available. And yes, I hear all the people talking about, oh my God, she has food stamps and she drives a Maserati. Well, something's absolutely wrong with that picture. My guess is the money that she makes, she does illegally. Because she can't survive any other way. My whole point. That's what brings the validity to the whole point that I'm trying to make. Until we can actually pay for, you know, a week's work so that somebody can live on the pay, not too many things are going to get any better in our whole world, because it's just not going to ever be okay for these people who are struggling. One night I talked about the difference between pay for a female CEO and a male CEO. And I was astounded to find out that if I compared apples to apples, even though I was very proud to see a woman was making $16 million a year as a CEO, her male counterpart was making $121 million a year. What in the hell do you have to do to be worth $100 million? I can't imagine. How about our sports stars? How about all the money that it goes out the door there? And again, all that money gets paid to these very talented young men and young women who practiced, and kept themselves in wonderful shape. I respect it. I absolutely respect it. But it also, notice our big auditoriums and places like that, they don't fill up anymore. Because on $10 an hour, you can't afford a ticket to go to the Rose Bowl or to the War Memorial in Fort Lauderdale or any of those places, or the Orange Bowl. You can't. The seats in those places are astronomical. And if they don't sell out the tickets, they don't put it on TV to punish us. So again, you know, something, someone, whichever one of our leaders is strong enough and has a sturdy enough backbone, they got to stand up and they got to help us out of this mess. And that's where it's going to start, by making things more achievable by those of us who try so hard to make ends meet. It isn't easy. And it doesn't need to be for free. My son said to me tonight, my oldest son, Mom, what are you going to say? You know, everybody gets new sneakers when they need them. And I said, no. You should be able to live within your means, but you should be able to live. You should be able to live. And I know too many people that are supplementing their income by doing things that they shouldn't be doing because their job doesn't pay them enough, or they work two full-time jobs. It's not, you know, that's not okay. And that's not what this was meant to be. The American dream is not about this. Do I think it's possible for somebody who really, really tries hard and gets an education to be successful? Of course I do. Of course I do. But we're not all born entrepreneurial. We're not all born so that technology and the world of really big upper finance comes easy to us, even with an education. Sometimes some of us never grasp some of those things. So we can't be that. And besides that, who's going to run the rest of the world if all of us are CEOs? Who's going to do the actual job if all of us are CEOs? Or general managers, or directors of, or supervisors of? What about the other people? The other people have to make a living too. And it's not fair. My grandson says this to me all the time. Grandma, how is it the people that work the hardest make the least amount of money? I said, you know, that's a great question. He says, I know everybody says that when you're using your brain, you deserve more money. And I said, well, I guess in essence, I guess I've heard people say that as well. And I guess that if you are really bright and you really know how to solve problems and make things work better and things like that, then you should. But again, the ideas are worth something, but the execution of the ideas should be worth something as well. So I hope that most of you out there tonight agree with this, and I hope that you understand what it is, the point I'm trying to make. And I really, really hope that someday, in the scheme of things, we get to a place where these are the things that are important. Not the, you know, not the worrying about things that haven't happened yet, or the precautions about things that haven't occurred yet. Those things always need to be in your mind, and you have to be aware, and you have to be somewhat prepared. But you also have to take care of the problems that are at hand, that are here in our own front yard and in our own backyard and in our own job place and at our own supermarket every day. I saw some interesting things this morning. There's so many people that have gone back to their roots and have started growing food. And organic food, by the way, that aren't covered with pesticides and things like that. And that's how they're eating, and that's how they're raising their families. But again, that doesn't stop you from needing insurance on your home. It doesn't stop you from needing a vehicle. If you have a vehicle, or if you have a tractor, or if you have any of those kind of things, you need insurance on them. Accidents in farms and places like that are horrendous. No matter what you're doing, there's all these other outside items that as an adult you need to be able to take care of. I have a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old. It's my grandson and his girlfriend. They want to get married. They live here with us. They're both working. And my grandson works all day in a landscaping organization. He cuts trees and does a lot of different kinds of work and drives a big chipper truck. He has a certified driver's license, and he is a hardworking young man. And then he comes home from school at night, takes a shower, or from work at night, and goes to school because he wants to learn about HVAC. I'm sorry, that was what he was going to do. He's learning about mechanics because he likes cars and he likes to work on them. So he's doing both. His girlfriend works as well. They would love to be out from underneath Grandma and have their own freedom and their own home and be able to do everything they want to do. And you know, even though my grandson's been with me most of his life and he's very comfortable in my home, they would like to have their own place. I would like them to have that too. But even with both of them working, we sat down and worked out the numbers. They could never do it. They could never do it. I pay for a couple different things for them. And without that, and of course, I, for the little bit of rent that they give me every week, because I insist on that, but you know, there's always milk in the refrigerator. There's always detergent in the laundry room. There's always toilet paper in the bathroom. You know, it's a lot. So very sadly for them, they can't do it on their own. And it's a shame. It's a shame. But, you know, eventually they'll have to be out there on their own. And it's my hope that when my grandson graduates from the college and learns another trade where he can make more money than he's making now and they'll be in a better place, it will still be a struggle. Because unless you're making quite a bit of money now on a yearly basis, you really can't even afford to do all the things that you're supposed to do to cover your assets, if you get my drift. So, again, insurance on a home is anywhere from 1,500 to all the way up in the double-digit thousands a year to cover a home, depending on what kind of home you have, and taxes on your home. So even if they rented a place and found a place, it's still going to be a struggle. And this is worldwide. This is not just here in my family with my grandchildren. This is with everybody's grandchildren and everybody's family. That's why I brought everybody with me. That's why we all live together, to help each other, to make sure that we can all make it. And we're actually struggling as well. So something along those lines has to change so that we can do something about all the violence. Because when people are frustrated and angry and depressed and not knowing how they're going to make ends meet, if they don't get sick from it, which happens many times, and that's a whole other story, getting sick and have to go under the care of a doctor or be put in a hospital or anything like that. Oh, God, I don't even want to get into that conversation at this point in time. But if you don't do that and you're still fighting out there, then a lot of times, you know, especially the young people, because it's in their face all the time, they end up doing something that they shouldn't be doing. So I think that all in all, I loved the article that this mayor wrote, and I think that he is on the right track, absolutely, positively. And I think that it's a wonderful thing to know that there's somebody out there who really understands really what's going on. And I hope with my heart and soul that all of this anger and turmoil calms down with the death of Trayvon. And again, my heart goes out to that whole family. Believe me, when I thought we were going to lose my son when he was 13, and when I thought we were going to lose his son when he turned 15, it's the very, very worst thing that can happen to a parent, and I get that. My heart and soul gets that. And I think it's a major, major tragedy. And it's a major, major tragedy that it's happening almost every minute of every day. And I'm hoping that everybody pays attention to that, and instead of anger begetting more anger and hatred begetting more hatred, that we all wake up tomorrow morning and realize that that's not getting us anyplace. It's just getting us deeper into the depths of hate and despair, and that doesn't serve anyone, ever, for any reason. The only thing that serves you is happiness and forgiveness and love, compassion, all of the things that come much more naturally to us than all this anger. I hope everybody understands that. I would like to talk a little bit also about our new Pope. And I mentioned this briefly last night, but I'm very touched. Having been raised a Catholic, I am very touched by this hands-on Pope that we have right now. I don't know if any of you saw the procession that was on the news, and everybody was panicking because he had his window open and he was reaching out and touching people, and it was beautiful. Why? Because we all need to believe. We all need to believe in something that's much bigger than we are. And instead of poo-pooing it because you don't think that for whatever reasons the Pope deserves that kind of recognition and respect, I think you need to think about what we need. And we need somebody. We need heroes. We need real heroes that we don't find out about having this or having that or doing this or doing that. Real heroes that really care and that we can look up to and we can be proud of, and we can point to them and say to our children, now, you know, this is somebody who really cared about the human race. This is somebody who loved the people around them and who tried really hard to not do any unkindnesses to anyone. And I think if we could do that, it would be, everything would be a lot nicer, a lot nicer. I am going to cut short tonight, though. I am thinking that I've talked long enough, and I'm sorry no one called in. That would have been nice if I had somebody to converse with. But Shelley will be back tomorrow night, and we will do a recap of what we've done this week. We spent one evening with Barry to learn about Medicare and supplemental insurance once you are eligible for Medicare and your Social Security. Of course, you're eligible for your Social Security by the time you're 62, but we talked about the benefits of the Medicare that goes with your Social Security. And last night with Izzy Kalman and all of the things that we talked about in regard to teaching our kids to stand on their own 2 feet and realize when somebody's picking on them or bullying them that sometimes they just have to turn around and say, you know, what's your problem? You know, what did I do to you? You don't need to kowtow to them. You don't need to act scared. You just need to turn around and stand on your own 2 feet and say, what's wrong with you? Why are you, you know, and be strong. However, we made a very, very important, valid point, and that is if one of your children or if you're a child and you're listening to me now or a young person and someone is hurting you, that's a whole different story. Once they lay hands on you and hurt you, that's not bullying. That is against the law, and it's a crime to hurt somebody else with your hands or with any other object. So if somebody's doing that to you, that's not bullying. That is abuse. That is not the same thing. So if something like that is happening with you, you need to speak up and you need to tell authorities. When Izzy talked this week and said, you know, he doesn't think it's a good idea for the adults in the picture to get all involved and to, you know, reprimand the bully, so to speak, and get him in trouble, because then it just starts that ring of hatred. You know, it kind of spirals out of control, and now he really hates you because you got him in trouble, and now your life is going to be miserable, and many kids don't want to tell exactly for that reason. So that really doesn't work. That's really not the answer. What the answer is if you can handle it safely by yourself, by turning around and saying, you know, what's the problem? What did I do to you? Or did I do something to make you angry with me? What's up? And if that doesn't work and it turns into something even more aggressive or something, or they, like I said, put hands on you in some aggressive fashion, then it turns into something else. That's really not being bullied. Bullying is a whole other story, and abuse is another story. So I hope that that's not happening to any of you or yours, but considering the statistics that I read all the time, chances are there's somebody who's listening right now who's going through something that they don't know how to deal with. And if you are, you have to search out somebody who will listen to you. Maybe not even somebody who will get involved, just somebody who will hear you. And sometimes when you talk about things out loud, you think all on your own of what's going to work to fix it. I know that seems strange, but it's true. Sometimes just talking to someone else, and they don't have to say anything, but if you talk long enough, you show yourself the right way. You show yourself what avenue to take, and often that's the best one when you figure it out all on your own. because you know what you can do, what you can't do, and you know the situation better than anybody else. So you're really the appropriate person to fix it. So sometimes just talking it out, saying everything out loud, helps you get to the right answer. And it's easy to do. And, you know, sometimes I have people write it down. If you really don't feel like there's anybody you want to tell something to, for whatever the reasons, maybe you don't want to bother somebody, maybe you don't want to upset somebody, maybe you would just like to handle it yourself, write it down on a piece of paper and read it back to yourself and see what you think you should do after you do that. It works. It's great therapy. I think I've mentioned through the months on the show that I've been married 46 years, and writing letters to my husband has saved our marriage many, many times. And sometimes he never even gets to see the letter, because after I write it, I realize I'm being silly or ridiculous or whatever word you want to use. And I realize that I just need to get over it. There's nothing really wrong. I'm just overreacting to something. And then other times, he's gotten the letter, and through the years, many times he would carry it with him for a long time until he really understood what was going on in my mind. Perhaps that's why we are still together after 46 years. So I am going to sign off early. I want to thank all of you for being with me tonight, and we'll be back tomorrow night, and next week I have some more guests joining us. I look forward to that. And from my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. And I will be back tomorrow night. Bye-bye.